You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
What are you doing later?
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time. The Roast of Tom Brady. A Netflix live event happening May 5th, hosted by Kevin Hart. The seven-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
This segment is brought to you by Jigmasters. Step up your game with high-quality performance jigs, spinnerbaits, buzzbaits, and more from Jigmasters.com. And always, when in doubt, get the jig out.
Welcome to the Feather and Fur segment on the Paddle and Fin Podcast Network. Join me, Brad Hurlbus, as we sit around the campfire with this week's special guest to talk hunting, dogs, traditions, and all things outdoors. Welcome back to another episode of Feather and Fur Podcast. I'm your host, as always, Brad Hurlbus, and tonight we have a special guest on. Her name is Charmin Sams, and she is a guide and an outdoors woman, so we are going to bring her on right away. Here we go. Welcome to the show, Charmin.
Hey, thanks, Brad.
So we kind of met through Instagram for a quick little background, like everybody seems to these days, and I thought your profile was super interesting. It looks like you have lead a really outdoors life throughout hunting, guiding, ranching, it even looks like. So I really wanted to get you on just to see what it was like out west.
It's a whole nother experience for sure. It's beautiful country.
It looks a little rugged too, though.
I mean,
it looks a little more rugged than Wisconsin.
Right. It's and the beauty about Oregon is that there's so many different topographical and geographical areas. Like we have, like right now I'm in Heppner, Oregon, which is like the top. It's eastern Oregon, but it's northeastern Oregon, but the top of the high desert. So central Oregon isn't that far away, like Redmond, Bend, in that area. And then, you know, I'm 2 hours west of like the Blue Mountains, and we've got the coast, and you can be anywhere in 4 or 5 hours in the whole state. So
sure. Just really diverse in whatever you want for habitat. You almost can pick and choose what you want for habitat. If you want lowland, or if you want plains almost, or mountains, or coast.
Exactly. I was raised in northeastern Oregon in the La Grande area, and it's in the Blue Mountains and more timber, more, elk country. I mean, there's elk country here, but I don't even know if it's showing or not, but like I'm in a very hilly area, not a lot of trees right now, and is where I'm living and working, and it's different from what
sure.
I'm with, so.
Sure, I can only imagine. I mean, if that's elk country, like elk hunting, and that's just got to be very different. Like, how do you hide?
actually, from where I live and the ranch that I work for and live on, from me, it's about a 45-minute drive, and you gain like about 3,000 feet in elevation, and you're in the timber. So,
all right.
But we're in the prime bird area here where I'm at, upland game for chucker, quail, pheasant. We've got a nice variety, and there wild birds are everywhere here. So
that's awesome. I mean, we don't have there's still little pockets of wild pheasants left in Wisconsin, but they pretty much disappeared with the change in the farming practices. And that's really why I chase grouse and woodcock so much, because I enjoy chasing a wild bird over a raised and planted bird.
Right.
So to hear you have that much diversity, that's just kind of amazing.
Right. And we've got mule deer and a few whitetails scattered here and there. And so we've got big game and we have wild turkeys. And in fact, this morning when I was headed to work, in my driveway, there were two roosters fighting for mating season, you know, and I'm surprised there's usually chucker. I'm sitting behind my house. There's usually a bunch of chucker back here. So that are roaming around just like in my backyard. So.
Oh, that's gotta be great for dog training.
Oh yeah, it is actually.
What are the laws in Oregon for training dogs on wild birds in off season?
You can train dogs privately anytime you want, and you can keep wings, and you know, for scent. And they also sell, you know, different distributors sell different scents that you can put on dummies and stuff like that.
Sure.
But I found that wings help, and they also allow us to take doves we actually use homing pigeons and put them in traps and start them off with not only the scent and getting them to work back and forth and you know, use the wind and just kind of hone their natural instinct, but we also you know, get them to steady, you know, to shot too. So
absolutely. And that's all on private ground. Are you allowed to train on public land in the off season at all? Because in Wisconsin, I can train up until April 15th on public land, or yeah, tax day, and then not again until August 1st.
Yeah, in Oregon, I've always worked privately, and
sure,
I own ranches private too. I work for my own ranch, but I also work for another private ranch. And they, no problems. The only thing that's weird about Oregon and dogs is in Oregon, you can't hunt anything besides birds, you know, waterfowl and upland game, or bobcats in Oregon with dogs. You can't hunt bear, you can't hunt cougars, you can't hunt anything in Oregon with dogs or any kind of hounds, except for
bobcats. Interesting.
And you also can't bait, no baiting. You can't bait bears, you can't any of that, so.
So bears really, that's far different than Wisconsin, because a big thing, there's two ways to hunt bear in Wisconsin, and that's baiting or dogs. I mean, that's pretty much what it is. There's no spot and stalk. There's no call. There's nothing. I mean, it's dogs or baiting.
Yeah, no, it's all for bear. Unless you're like in bear territory in Oregon, it's pretty much all spot and stalk here. So
that's crazy. That's just a completely different style of hunting.
Right, right.
And then what about rabbits? Can you run dogs and rabbits there, or do you not have a lot of rabbits?
We have rabbits, but a lot of our species are protected. So that's another issue. Like we have cottontails that are protected, and you know, so rabbits really aren't, wild rabbits aren't really a big hunting here. I don't hunt rabbit. I mean, hunt coyotes, which coyotes are a predator in Oregon. And so you don't need a tag for them. And there's no limit, because they're predatory, but, yeah, rabbits, I don't hunt rabbits. So I can't figure it on that topic.
Rabbits is like my Griff, loves chasing rabbits. Like she'll flip from bird to fur instantly. If she gets on a hot rabbit trail, it drives me bonkers. Cause I won't shoot them. I won't shoot them in front of her or over her. Cause I don't want her to keep chasing it, but right. I can instantly tell the difference when she picks up hot rabbit and it's gone. Like, if I could get her to focus like that on birds,
right.
Oh, look out. But I mean, it's something about her and rabbits, even in my subdivision. Like I take her for a walk because I live in the suburbs, but I run her quite a bit on public land. And on public land in Wisconsin, we have designated dog training areas, which are open year round to run them, which is nice. Plus a lot of farmers are willing to work with you, like, especially if like winter wheat or alfalfa, and you just say, hey, I just want to exercise my dog in your field. Most of them really don't have a problem with that.
Right, right.
Which is nice. I mean, it just opens up some more land. When you start asking, it's also a really good intro if you're trying to get permission around here to hunt, because now you've already established that relationship and shown you're responsible.
Right, and respectful. That's another
thing
here. There's a lot of land around here. And Onyx, not to plug any other, you know, apps or anything, but Onyx is your friend around here, because you can go from, you know, BLM land to, I mean, and it doesn't look like there's a fence there, but all of a sudden you've crossed into private property and, or CRP ground. And like, it's sometimes a tricky, avenue, unless you really know the area that you're hunting around, you know, whatever unit you're hunting, you really should invest in something that's going to tell you boundaries around here, because people, they take trespassing here pretty seriously, because, you know, I mean, there's cattle, they don't want their livestock, you know, hurt, injured, wounded, you know, they also don't, you know, want people on their land just because, and cattle rustling and horse thieves are still a thing around these parts. So
I will agree 100% with Onyx. I mean, I've talked about Onyx before on the show. I use it year round for hunting, for fishing, everything. I mean, I always have Onyx on my phone and on a tablet, and I use it on my computer. I use the whole trio of it all to figure out what I'm going to do for the next time I go out on the water. But crazy, I never would have thought horse thieves are really still a thing.
Yeah, they are. Well, I mean, and so in Oregon, like, not to get off the subject of hunting, but livestock wise, when you sell cattle in Oregon through the sale yard, all the brands have to be inspected. So if, you know, you have cattle stolen, branding cows in Oregon is like your title to that animal. And sure. So if you had, you know, 5 head of steers stolen, and then, you know, mysteriously, like a month later, 5 steers come through the sale with your brand on it, somebody's going to be in big trouble. So
that's how they kind of track it. That makes sense. Cause how else are you really going to track it? I mean,
yeah. Ear tags. I mean, cut out. I mean, there's branding is something that's permanent. And, you know, there's 2 types of branding. There's hot branding where you burn them, or there's cryo branding too, where it's like a liquid nitrogen brand. But I mean, and it has to be visible in so brands are registered in this state. So they have to be, when you register it, you have a specific place you're going to put it. You're either going to put it on, like, you know, say the right flank, or, you know, the left rib, or so, you know, even if somebody tries to make a branding iron with your brand on it, it still has to be in that certain place. So, and ear tags, a lot of people, you know, we have ear tags for the ranch that I work for that has, you know, the owner's last name on them and the number, so we can keep track of our cows and calves and all that stuff. But they can be cut out easily, you know.
I mean, if you ever get lost cattle, I'm sure that probably still happens out there. Oh, I mean, at least an ear tag tells the owner.
Right. And running through, you know, I mean, we have so much big game here. Like, I mean, they'll tell you about miles and miles and miles of fence. And Oregon is actually an open range state. So in Oregon, the law states that you fence your property to keep livestock out, not to keep livestock in. So, like, you'll be driving, like, down in Southern Oregon through, like, Jordan Valley, and there's cows all over the road and highways and just out in the open range. And that's perfectly acceptable. Like, that's, and so if we get cows misplaced, or, you know, elk tear out the fence and we have them on, property owners are pretty good about going, hey, you got some cows out, they're on my property or whatever. But, like, you know, beware of the driver who's driving down the highway that's not from this state, that, you know, is doing 60 miles an hour on an open lane and hits a cow, because that's not the owner's fault.
Sure. So it's up to the private property owner to fence their property if they don't have cattle and don't want cattle on it then.
Right.
Interesting.
Yep.
That's far different than here. At least I believe it is. I don't have cattle or anything, but I know all the farms around here fence their own farm.
Right.
So that tells me it's different.
Right. And some people, you know, you'll get people who just moved to the state, you know, out of state, or, and they buy some property or whatever, and they're like, well, your cows are on my property, and, you know, I'm going to charge you rent, or I'm going to, you know, I mean, just not knowing. And, you know, and then somebody, you know, or they call and inquire, you know, what do I do? They call the sheriff. I've got, you know, these cows, or, you know, whoever. And they're like, well, you're just going to have to see if you can locate the owner, because you're just as much responsible. You know, if we have neighboring fence, we're both responsible for keeping it maintained. So, you know, sure. It's just one person's responsibility. So
that makes sense. So is it calving season there then?
We just finished calving. So our calving season started in around the end of December, first part of January. And we calved out about 600 cows and heifers. Heifers are young cows that have never had a calf before. So a heifer is one that hasn't had a calf.
Okay.
And cows have had, you know, one or more calves. So we calved out about 600, and we just branded. We've got about 80 to 100 head left still that are late calvers, just because the bull got to them late, evidently. So we're gonna have branding here shortly. So we're waiting, still waiting on a few calves.
So that's got to be a really busy time of year, though.
Oh, for sure. Yeah, and I usually do the night shift, so I usually work like 7 p.m. to 7 a.m. And I go out. I mean, it gets cold here, and you know, got to make sure that, you know, if they're having any trouble having the calf, or if they're, you know, if it's cold enough, sometimes you got to be right there to pick the calf up just so you can, it doesn't freeze to the ground. You know, it sometimes gets so cold that when the mom goes to clean it off, that it's tough, you know. So
sure. That's it's got to be a stressful time too. I would just think about that. It's got to be stressful. I mean, so much of the ranch rides on that, I'm sure.
Oh yeah. 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 I mean, you have to think, I mean, that's all, you know, that's your crop, you know, I mean,
right.
In ranching, you know, you produce livestock, and farming, you produce a crop, and we're just as dependent on, you know, things beyond our control. I mean, we can, you know, vaccinate, we can take all the steps necessary, but you know, there's things that are out of our control, just like with farming and the weather, you know, so.
Right. So how did you get started in the lifestyle, from ranching, hunting, growing up Oregon, I guess?
Right. And it's Oregon, not Oregon. Oregon.
Sorry. I'm from Wisconsin and we drag out everything.
I'm just teasing. But it is Oregon. No,
but it is.
So I'm pretty blessed. I was born into the ranching lifestyle. I'm a third generation ranch owner. I was pretty much raised by my grandfathers, and they are the ones that taught me how to hunt. And I just fell in love with it. And, you know, they taught me how to take care of my animals, harvest, you know, my animals, clean them, process them, you know, just be respectful of the animal, you know, I mean, and hunting, and just, and then I got into birds, and my boys all hunt. I have three boys. They're 26, 22, and 14. They all hunt. They hunt big game, upland game, and waterfowl too. They're more waterfowl freaks though. I'm an upland game girl. Like when it comes to birds, they couldn't get up in the morning at 6 a.m. to go catch the bus to go to school, but they could get up at 3 a.m. to go get a good draw on a federal pond so that they could shoot ducks, you know?
Sure. Sure. That's unique too. That's not like Wisconsin. We don't have public blinds. We don't have draws. It's first come, first serve to a spot.
I got you.
So, I mean, and marshes can get very, very busy around here. It's right. Hard to find. That's kind of why I took up kayak hunting, was to get into different areas that other boats can get into.
Right.
But we have no draws. Like, there's no getting there at 3 a.m. waiting for draws, or like what you see down south where like wildlife officers letting boats go at a certain amount of time, only one per boat for so often, stuff like it's not like that here at all. I know guys for opening day. So our opening morning is a regular opener now. It used to be a noon, then they went to 9 a.m. and now it's standard time. Uh-huh. They'll go out the afternoon before and sleep in the marsh.
Yeah, my kids would probably do something like that too. But but it's a first come, first serve on the draw. It's not, okay. Whoever shows up first. Like, and they have, you know, game people out there, fish and wildlife people. And, you know, and they, okay, we're going to put, we've got six ponds and we're going to take 20 people. So, you know, here everybody gets to draw, you know, so, but
all right.
Their 20th person or 21st person, they're going to be like, nope, we're full, you know? So, and then they turn them away. So that's why you want to be there early, because it is first come, first serve for the draw.
Got it. But the draw is the draw random then? So if they're taking 20 people, you don't know what pond or what spot. Do they also tell you what spot on the pond you have to be on?
Hey, it's Kaylee Cuoco for Priceline. Ready to go to your happy place for a happy price? Well, why didn't you say so? Just download the Priceline app right now and save up to 60% on hotels. So whether it's Cousin Kevin's Kazoo Concert in Kansas City, go Kevin! Or Becky's Bachelorette Bash in Bermuda, you never have to miss a trip ever again. So download the Priceline app today. Your savings are waiting.
Go to your happy place for a happy price. Go to your happy price, Priceline.
It depends on how big the water is, you know. I mean, some ponds are small and, you know, they're only going to put, you know, if they have a party of three, they're only going to put a party of three on them, you know.
Sure.
So it just depends. Sometimes you'll get like places that have like, you know, five or on a big marsh, you know, five or six spots that they'll just, they'll scatter you out and they'll say, okay, you're on three and we got two on five. And, you know, they just separate them out that way. Sometimes like my boys would go with like 10 of their friends and, you know, they wouldn't all get, no way. Usually did they ever all get to hunt on the same pond. So.
Sure. Sure. That's unique. It's always interests me how different states handle different challenges. Whereas right. Wisconsin's just a free for all. Like you hear people suggesting that we do things like this in certain areas because it's not big enough to hold the number of hunters that want to be there.
Right, right. And so nobody regulates like the amount of people that are on a pond.
No,
that's crazy.
No, not at all. So like Horicon Marsh, mm-hmm. which if memory serves me, it's the largest freshwater marsh in North America.
Uh-huh.
There's a federally protected area that which you cannot hunt at all, but the area you can hunt, uh-huh. as many people that want to pack in there can pack in there.
Oh my goodness. That would make for a long day.
it does. It can definitely make for a long day. I was hunting a marsh this last fall and I got way back there. I was the first one there. I hear someone start calling behind me, and I mean close, like 50 yards off to like my 7 o'clock. I'm like, there's no way someone's over there. Like they couldn't have gotten past me because I thought I came in the only direction from the water. I'm in the only direction you can get there.
Right.
Sure enough, someone shoots. I paddle out and look. Their decoys are 40 yards from me, and they found a back way to walk in I didn't know was there.
Oh my goodness. Yeah.
And there's.
That's sketchy sometimes. So,
and there's no possible way they didn't know I was there. And that's why people like ask for some things like that, where they're like, if we could regulate people, because you have people that just, hey, this is where I hunt. This is my spot. I don't care if you got here first. Right. This is my spot, which that's not how public land works.
Right. Exactly. Exactly. Yeah. But, and in Oregon, like I said, they do the federal, you know, water, the ponds and stuff, the marshes, they're really good about regulating those. And depending on what season, I mean, it could be, you know, Canadian geese, it could be, you know, whatever. But the upland game though, like if you're hunting on public land or even big game on public land, like it's a free for all and it sometimes gets hectic. I mean, and there's people that have been in the same spots for years and years and years and years, and they're like, this is my spot, you know, but they'll go up a week before the season starts, park trailers, like unload all their stuff, and then they'll come back a week later and they're surrounded, you know, I mean,
sure.
So, you know, it's one of those things that, I mean, I, like I said, my mom and I co-own and operate a ranch together in Eastern Oregon, and I've been blessed that it's 2,500 acres and we have big game, and I've always been blessed to be able to hunt private land, but I have hunted a lot of public land too. And it's almost scary. Like, I mean, because you never know who's around you. You don't know their experience. You don't know, you know, I mean, are they safe? I mean, are they not safe? Do they see you? You know, you always want to try and stay as visible as you can, but how do you spot and stalk when, you know, you're, when you've got 50 other people or, you know, within 500 yards of you doing the same thing and you can't see any of them, you know? So,
right.
I mean, it's a little crazy.
For big game hunting, like how hard is it for an out of stater like me to draw a tag for elk or mule deer?
The prized elk or bull elk tags in Oregon are for Rocky Mountain. I can't speak too much to Roosevelt because I live on the east side of the Cascades and I've always hunted over here. West side of the Cascades is the Roosevelt. So I'm not familiar with that, but it's in Oregon, big bull, not likely. They give preference points here. And so, you put in for the draw, and if you don't get your tag, then they give you a preference point. And so your preference points start adding up. Even if you, get just by putting in, you get preference points.
Sure.
And what happens is that, so like Mount Emily unit and the Wenaha unit are the big, big, like, prize. It takes sometimes they're the hunt of a lifetime for big bull, but everything else is spike only, pretty much. I mean, there's other bull draws, but those two are the once in a lifetime hunts in Oregon, pretty much.
So, got it
But the general draw is it's usually spike only. So we, as a landowner, based on our acreage, I think it's 2,000 to 4,999 acres, you're allowed 4 LOP tags, which are landowner preference tags. So, but we have to, like, it's, so it's me, my mom's husband, my stepsister, and my oldest son usually take those tags, and we have to put in for them. And the crazy thing is they put us in the general draw first, even though we have LOP tags. So they've taken all of our preference points to hunt on our own land, but the we take, we're in Starkey unit, so we hunt the South Starkey unit private, and so you can't drink, and it's a cow elk hunt because we hunt for meat.
Sure.
And we've all been fortunate and had our bull time, but they with the private, you can't, during that hunt, you cannot hunt public land. You have to hunt that end of that unit and private land only.
Sure, that makes sense.
Yeah, I mean, it's getting more and more regulated. Archery season used to just be able to used to be able to buy over the counter tag for archery season, and you could harvest a doe, a buck, a cow, or a bull elk. And now archery this year in 2021 for the draw is all draw for archery, and you have to declare a unit. Didn't used to be have to declare a unit for archery.
All right, so. Is it a population issue or is it just a number of hunters issue now?
I don't know. If you talk to some hunters in my area, they, it was a west side of the state issue. But
Okay.
because, you know, that's where Portland is and the metropolitan areas, and, you know, they live a different lifestyle than we do. And
sure.
You know, and a lot of people don't understand. I'm a firm believer that hunting is preservation. I mean, you have to have some type of regulation and on herd management and, you know, stuff like that. Like we want that's why the big bull tags are, you know, so controlled, which I agree with. You know, I mean, you should have to, you know what you're doing when you go into those areas it should be something that you wait for. That way you'll have more respect for what you're doing and the animal too, you know, I don't know that the answer is, you know, just more regulations, you know, sometimes
sure.
Overregulated, and then you have too much, you know, like, I mean, Idaho, right. Not very far away from, I mean, Oregon and Idaho border each other, and Oregon, wolves are protected. And Idaho, they're not. You can shoot as many wolves as you want, like coyotes.
Sure.
You know, so it's one of those things. So,
and Wisconsin actually had its second wolf hunt ever this past winter.
Oh, wow.
And it was after, I don't remember how many years there was in a break, because when they were federally listed, it got shut down. We got it in, they got delisted, we got a hunt in really quick, they got relisted, and then we were actually able to put together a hunt real quick this last winter when they were delisted again.
Yeah.
Which that had all of its own controversy, because they set a limit, and within 3 days they were over the limit trying to shut it down.
Right. And see, that's another thing here too. So there's not a bag limit. There's not a bag required for coyote or predator. They do stock it, livestock. And hunters, not necessarily where I grew up, but around here. Like, it's coyotes everywhere here. I was just riding in the mountains, and I have on video, actually on my Instagram, and I was like, I mean, this coyote was literally 25 feet away from me, and I smooched at him, and he turned around and looked at me, not even scared of me. And he had stalked me down a draw. I ran into like 5 of them that day, stalking cows and calves at our water holes. Like, I had to yell at my coworker who was on horseback too, because the coyote was stalking his dog that he was moving cows with, and he had no idea it was behind him. But now with and the coyotes in this area, they used to have a weekend, like it'd start at 5 o'clock on Friday evening and then go through 5 o'clock Sunday evening, and have big prizes and stuff for just predator control, just trying trying to get rid of as many coyotes as you could. And there was like teams, and like they had raffles and prizes and stuff. And ODFW is like, nope, not going to do that anymore. We're going to put Department of Fish and Wildlife. We're strictly going to go to, you can still hunt them, but on your own. You can't hunt them as like an event like that. And they're like, nope, we're going to fly them and we're going to do this. And I'm, and so it was just like 2 weeks ago and we were up in the high country in the mountains. And I'm like, okay, so where's the helicopters? Where are they flying them? Because I mean, five within, you know, I mean, the farthest one away from me was 100 yards. You know, I mean,
that's crazy.
And they are stalking us and they are not scared at all. You know, I mean, we've, because they stalk our dogs too. So when we're in the house, because that's, you know, fun time for them. They'll follow a dog sometimes farther than they'll follow a wounded cow or calf. So.
See, we are, our coyote season here is open year round as well. All you need is a small game permit. There's no bag limits, daily limits, anything like that. It's very different from what I've read from out west, where you can call and hunt those open plains, whereas we're hunting them here in timber, and they're not nearly as call susceptible as they are out west. They won't come running hundreds of yards away. They don't do that.
Right, and you can call here, but the only thing is that they get skittish. And, you know, like areas that have been hunted a lot, like, you know, vehicles, they're not worried. You can see them. They'll run right across the road in front of you and out into a field. And they'll stop and look at you as long as you're driving by. But as soon as they hear you stop, they're gone. Like they're getting it figured out. But in the high country where we were at this couple weeks ago, they're everywhere and not scared or shy of anything. So
the way that a lot of guys I know hunt them is they use dogs.
Yep. And we can't.
Right, and you can't. So and the guys I know that did really well in the wolf hunts, they run bear dogs and they run coyote dogs, and they were able to just flip that switch. And those are the guys that did really good on wolves too.
Right.
So for us, I mean, we can use dogs in so many different ways. We can't hunt deer with dogs though. We can use them to track wounded deer on a or track deer on a leash.
Oh, that's interesting.
They have to be leashed, and I don't, if I remember correctly, you can't have a weapon on you. So we actually have, not guides, but services where they train, just like we would for upland hunting, but they train for blood trailing. And then they normally do it all for free too, because it's just more training and experience for the dog. Absolutely. And they'll come out and they'll track your wounded deer for you.
Oh, wow. Yeah. And like, with, if we have livestock depredation from wolf or coyote kill or anything like that, and like, then we want to move forward or, you know, pursue like, you know, maybe a controlled hunt for wolf or, you know, anything like that. Like we have to take pictures and document it. The Fish and Wildlife has to come out and, you know, take a look at it. I mean, we had a cow and I don't think it was, I don't know. It's hard to say. It was a big cow. She had twins. One of the twins was tucked away and hidden. And when we came up, the other twin had been ripped out of her uterus, and the uterus was completely out of her, you know, prolapsed out of her. That calf was dead, but we managed to find the other twin that was hidden. So, I mean, there's no other explanation for that. It was some type of predator. I know it was a badger or anything like that. And it definitely wasn't a cougar. Like, I mean, it had to be a huge coyote or a wolf. I mean, it was, like I said, it was not a pretty sight. And she must have got spooked off or something, because, or the predator did, because she ended up, you could see it was a pretty fresh kill, and she'd ended up hemorrhaging from bleeding out. So
the cow didn't make it either, I'm assuming.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I didn't think so.
No, she was dead when we got there, along with the
Sure. That's crazy.
Yeah. I mean, yeah. And then bird wise, we also, that's another thing too, is that if we have sick calves and stuff like that, we have a huge bird of prey population here. We have hawks, we have falcons, we have eagles, golden and bald eagles. And I mean, I've been guiding guests in fact, the last hunt, because through the ranch that I work for, since we're a preserve, and we also, because we have to release so many birds a year and stuff, and our season goes from the middle of September through March 31st. And we're private property, so we don't have a bag limit. And like I said, we have to keep track of our bird count, how many we're harvested, sure, all of that. And I was taking my guest. We were actually just going to go shoot clay. So we have a sporting clay course. And there was a big, huge red-tailed hawk that had a chucker in its claws that flew right over the top of us and dropped a chucker right in front of us into the creek. So to be on the highway and watch two hawks or eagles fighting over a rabbit is not an unusual thing. One of them got dropped on the hood of my pickup one day when I was headed to town. So
that's crazy.
Yeah.
You have wild game falling on your cars.
Yeah. Yeah. And then I've been guiding hunts before, and my dogs will be on point, and I'll go up and cause I usually run two pointers and English pointers and a cocker to flush. And so, you know, one will go on point, the other will back him up to honor it. And then I'll get my, you know, hunters in a, you know, optimal shooting, safe, sure, shooting position. And then I'll make sure everybody's ready, send my cocker into flush. And my cocker's like running around in circles because they smell the scent. And then I get up there, and you know, when the cocker comes back and the pointer's clear and everybody's guns on safety, of course,
right.
Then I'll walk up, and sometimes you can see that it's a fresh hawk kill, you know, where the bird, sure, is, I mean, torn apart, and basically what's left is its bones and feathers, you know, so.
Sure.
But, you know, they catch the scent and they're like, whoop, yep, stopping, you know.
Right. So how long have you been guiding for? So you guide, I mean, we've already established this, obviously, and you guide for upland birds. Do you also guide for big game then too?
I do. And I this year at the ranch that I'm working for currently, I'm going to guide archery and big game this year. Last year I just guided upland game for them, but I've guided and done mentored youth hunts like individually on my own, you know, since, okay, I started hunting for several years. So
what do you prefer? Big game or watching your dogs work?
Here's the thing. I like them both. I have my bucket list. I want to kill a bighorn sheep. I want to kill a nice ram, and I would like to kill a wolf. I mean, and some people will argue with me or whatever, but I've seen what they've done to our livestock and seen, you know, I mean,
sure.
And I have respect. I have utmost respect for it, but they are an apex predator. They're not an opportunist like a coyote, you know? So,
right.
I mean, but I like big game, and I like the cold early mornings, and, you know, hiking and, you know, being out there. I'm a spot and stock kind of person. The ranch that I work for, there's a huge, you know, resident herd here that, and we spot and stock, but we can also do tree stands. And so we can take people that aren't, you know, maybe as physically fit, you know, and we, sure, have ground blinds and stuff. But I love watching my dogs work. Like, I really do. And that's, I give my kids about time all the time, because I'm like, you guys are waterfowl. Like, you know, the lab, he just waits, goes in, gets the bird, brings it back. My dogs, like, I'm like, I just sitting in a blind for a long time sometimes gets boring to me. So, I mean, I like being out and walking miles and, you know, and watching my dogs send a chucker, you know, or a covey of quail, or, you know, I mean, and just, it's just spectacular for me. And I always tell, you know, even my clients, I'm like, my dogs make me look good, you know? Like,
oh, absolutely. I love, I mean, it's,
they're the, I enjoy this situation, not necessarily me.
I mean, I enjoy a good waterfall hunt. Don't get me wrong.
Oh, me too. But I especially a banded goose. Yeah.
No. Right. But I mean, there's something special to me about being up in the north. I spend quite a bit of my October up in the north woods of Wisconsin chasing grouse, which is about a 3 to 4 hour drive, depending on where I go.
Right.
And there's something special about waking up on those crisp fall mornings, and you got the fall leaves on the forest floor, and you're watching your dog work fresh scent, and
right,
yeah, and then you hear, and then you get that big explosion of a grouse through the woods, which if you're lucky, you can actually get a shot off, let alone hit it.
Right. No, and I love hunting in the snow too. Because I love being able, especially people that have never hunted a preserve, or, you know, or people have never hunted with dogs. I have people that have hunted all over the world that I've guided. And then I have, you know, the once in a lifetime hunts too, that, you know, have never hunted. Like, I like to hunt chucker with two pointers and a flusher. And then I like to hunt pheasants just strictly on the flush with three cockers. And it's a different experience. And it's just, I mean, I will still run pointers if they're not comfortable. Some people aren't comfortable hunting on the flush, but you know, I mean, but my dogs are only ranging like 50 yards in front of me. Like they're not, I mean, my cockers aren't blowing birds 200 yards ahead of me. So
right.
Still in shooting opportunity, but yeah, but the dogs are, they make me look good for the most part. And they're a lot of fun to watch. So,
but I know that
they're not flawless all the time. I mean,
Oh no, I agree. They're still a dog, and occasionally they're going to make you look foolish. As much as they make you look amazing, they will make you look foolish.
I can't tell you that I've never had one of my dogs, like, you know, point a rabbit, you know, I mean.
Sure. My lab got real excited at one point. I was taking out a youth hunter for woodcock hunting. Mm-hmm. And my lab got real excited because he was real proud of his bird and jumped up and tore half of it out of his hand. And I mean only half of it.
Right.
I'm like, nice work, bud. Nice work.
No, I've had the same situation, and like, it's tough. Like I usually try to run. I have my one and two is actually a German short hair pointer and a English pointer, and they hunt so differently. Like Muley, my GSP, he is so high headed and air sense and works high and ahead and a little faster. And then the English pointer is very low to the ground and more methodical. And I think they complement each other great. But I ran the English pointer with a different pointer one day and another male, and he retrieves also. And so my flusher cocker and my other pointer got in a tug of war match with a bird and ripped the head off of a pheasant. And flung it all down the side of my white English pointer. So my guess thought that my dog would have been like seriously hurt. And but I was
nice.
Like, I promise it's just because they ripped that off your rooster. So
don't worry, it was a really pretty bird. We'll get you another one.
Right. Hopefully you weren't wanting to mount that one. No.
We'll get you one with a little bit softer of a mouth. Don't worry.
Right. Exactly. So yeah, so running all males is tough sometimes just because they're good during the hunt, but once a bird's down or they're like at a water station or something, then you got to be really careful because then they're not focused anymore and then they want to fight. So
I understand that completely. Only mine's a female. I rescued her at 6 and she has issues with other dogs big time.
Yeah.
I've got her to the point now where at least she'll vocalize. Before she wouldn't even vocalize. It would just be instant fight mode. Whereas now if another dog comes up to her, she'll vocalize.
Right.
So a lot of the fights kind of end there, unless it's a really dominant dog, which then I just get in between them real quick and we just shut that down. But if that dog tries to press back again later, like even if it's not dominant and like tries to sniff around, it's some quick like arr snaps and like aggressive enough, but like not like tear the flesh off the dog. But if you push her, she'll fight. I mean, it's legit dog fight.
Yeah. No, I just adopted a Australian cattle dog, a blue heeler, a week ago. And I think that, he went from the breeder to the owners. He just turned a year on the 22nd of April. And the owners, you know, circumstances just weren't conducive to his environment. And I think, I'm speculating, but, you know, maybe that they were a bit intimidated by him because that's a different breed in itself. And they're very protective and very, but they need to run. It's just like a hunting dog, you know, it's like, they need exercise to get that energy out and to get rid of their anxiety. And they were in a situation, they were living in a tidy home, moving from property to property. So there was no like consistency for this dog. And, you know, he was not used to closeness. And then he went back to the breeder for a week before I got him. And there's 5 other dogs up there. And just in that week got the pack mentality back. And, you know, he's not intact. He's been neutered, but I mean, he got his butt whipped a couple times by his dad. And just now he just, you know, is kind of, he's now just not secure in who he is. And so
we're
working on it. So,
but, and that doesn't change overnight. I mean, it took a solid year of working her and training her,
right,
to get her to even like reveal her personality. Like for that first 3 months, I don't know if her tail ever wagged unless if she was chasing a bumper or working bird scent. Like
right.
She'd walk around the house with her tail tucked tight.
Right. And see, he's I'm fortunate, like in this past week, like he's come around. He's very, like when I first went up there to meet him, cause I was like, no promises. The breeder reached out to me and I'm like, no promises. It's tough adopting an adult dog to begin with. And then knowing the breed standard and how, you know, protective, possessive, and sometimes, unpredictable they can be. And, you know, and I said, you know, I just have to meet him first. And like, he wouldn't even, without a treat in my hand, he wouldn't even let me touch him. And, sure. But he was very gentle when he took it. And I just saw something in him, and man, he is so attached to me now, but like, he's just very insecure about who he is. And he just needs somebody to believe in him and just, you know, not be afraid of him. And I think, you know, like if you, you know, went to reach for him, like he would just grab your hand. And I don't know if the previous owners weren't scared thinking that he was going to hurt them or what was going to happen. But, you know, I mean, that dog, he could hurt you if you want to. He's 40 pounds, you know, I mean, right. He's a big boy. I mean, he's not, I would hate to see him if he was intact. Like he's a big dog. So, but yeah.
You kind of get the whole round then, because you're training flushers, pointers, and cattle dogs then.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's got to be unique because everyone's slightly different.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. And just getting to know their personalities, you know. And when I first came here, I came into a kennel because I work for Ruggs Ranch, and when I guide for them, when I first came in, I know I came into a kennel of 40 dogs almost that were all complete strangers to me. And it took, I came months before the season started and just worked with the dogs and, you know, not only conditioned them, got them in shape, but they definitely got me in shape.
Sure.
And just kind of got to know all their personalities, you know. And sometimes I run the kennel dogs for hunting. The Australian kennel dog that I have is my only personal dog right now, but that lives with me full time. But the German short hair pointer that we have is the only one in the kennel. All the rest are English pointers. And there's just something about that dog that he's just attached to me, and I'm attached to him. So when he retires, he's coming home with me too. So
very nice. Very nice. How old is he?
He is 7. So he's getting close. He's got a couple more years left, and we usually have 2 to, you know, 9 or so. But yeah, I laugh. His name is Muley. I call him my jealous boyfriend. So if I take another dog out of the kennel, he throws a tantrum. Like, are you serious right now? What about me?
That's like, funny.
You're going to have to hunt every other day this week. So I'm trying to rest you right now.
That's funny. Yeah. And then you were speaking of the dogs getting you in shape. What's the average elevation you're hunting at?
It's not probably 2,800, 3,200 feet. Like it's not super high, but it's chukar country, and it's sometimes straight uphill and straight downhill. And then, you know, I as the guide, I carry all the birds. I also carry all the ammo. I also carry all the water for my dogs if we're in between water stations. So sometimes my pack can be about 35 to 40 pounds on top of walking, you know, 20 miles. So
sure. What is the mileage on an average hunt for you and the dogs? Like that has me real curious.
Well, so for packages through the ranch that I guide for, we do a 3-hour hunt in the morning, and then we do a 2.5-hour hunt in the afternoon. And we usually hunt chukar, like huns and stuff in the higher elevations on different, you know, area, rocky, you know, hilly stuff, sage, for the 3-hour hunt. And then, the lower lands and, you know, high grass and stuff in the afternoon for pheasants, but we get a mixed bag because there's chukars all through there too. And quail. And I mean, they're everywhere. Like you can't just look at the land and go, oh yeah, there's only chukar there. I mean, I have a video of in the wintertime of a chukar covey of like 30, and then 2 big roosters flying behind them. So it's a mixed bag here. But so the hunt manager, he has I just run Garmin collars with just the tone, and, you know, okay. I have the GPS on them, but he bought one that's got the Garmin GPS. And in a 3-hour hunt, because you got to figure they're doing triple time of what we are. And I think it was 32 miles that a dog did in like 3 hours, one of his dogs. So
you're doing about 10 miles then. That's quite a bit.
I think I looked at my phone because I set it on a pedometer thing, and I ended up doing, it was about 18 miles. So,
all right. So I will agree 100% three times, because my dog, when we're hunting grouse, is about three times.
Right. Back and forth, let me come back and we'll check in and then we'll go ahead. And yeah.
And I'll be, I mean, 6-7 miles in the area I hunt, that I'm feeling it after that, but I'm hunting thick timber. Like there's no just, I mean, you're hunting the hills, you got the rocks, like you have elevation changes where I don't have to deal with that, but I'm climbing over logs, under branches. I'm constant, like I just actually switched that this year, an Orvis Light Vest. Like it's super thin, because otherwise I'm always hung up on branches.
Right. Yeah, I have the PFG. I have a big winter coat because I've also bird hunted in 18 degree weather with 20 mile an hour winds too. So, sure. I mean, we're a rain or shine opportunity, you know. So, but we also do guided horseback hunts too, and we go up to a higher elevation, close to 4,000 feet. You know, and it was 18 degrees and 30 mile an hour winds. And I had to pony 5 horses in for my guest, and we brought them in side by side because where we were going, it was snow and ice, and it was just not good area for them. But, you know, I wasn't going to take any inexperienced riders through there anyway. And I led 5 horses in. And, but once we got up on top, it was good. It was good hunting. And in that case, somebody rides ahead with the dogs, and then the guests, and like I usually wrangle even if it's my guests that are guiding, just because I can be with them and socialize with them, and I can make sure they're safe on horseback. And then we have scabbards that they hold their shotgun in, and then whoever's up front with the dogs will raise their hand, and then we'll ride ahead up closer to them, and then they'll dismount, get their shotguns, I take their horses, and then they go, and then the flusher is in a side by side because we don't want it to get hurt by the horses because it's so little, you know. So, sure. Yeah, it's a big system, but they're so fun though, and everybody that's done them is like, oh my god, I can't believe I've never done this, and we're gonna do it again, you know.
So you ride in by horse, but then you're walking during the actual hunt. You're not using horses to like get up to the dogs that are like a mile or two away.
No, we ride horseback, and then the person who has the dogs is usually, about 100 yards away from us. And so then when they stop and raise their hands, that means the dog's on point. And so then I ride up with my guest up to a certain point, and then we stop, and then they only have to walk like 10 feet usually to shoot. So, cause our horses are going to die. So.
All right. Interesting. So you can, I mean, you're covering, I mean, the dogs have to be covering just crazy miles on days like that.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's pretty rocky and rough terrain. And sometimes like we wrap their feet before we hunt in that area, just because we, you know, and it's stickers and sage and, you know, just lava rock and steep country sometimes. And so, yeah.
Well, you got to make sure the dog's safe. I mean, the dog's sure. I mean, that's one of my top priorities always. Like right. When we get to that icy, crusty snow, I normally just boot my dog so I don't have to worry about cut pads or especially if I'm up north for like this past grouse camp for mine, we got some of the craziest weather I've ever seen where we were getting 2 to 3 inches. This is late October here, and normally we don't deal with snow that early, but it was 2 to 3 inches every night with a start of 5 inches to kick the season off when I was up there.
Oh, wow.
And I wasn't, and I'm okay with hunting snow. My dog's good with it, but I just know I got to boot her because she'll run hard through that snow to the point where she'll get some snowballs, rubber pads, they'll get bloody, they'll start to ooze.
Right.
And now I'm fighting a losing battle the entire time because now I have injured paws that I'm trying to keep in good enough shape to continue hunting. Whereas if I just boot her to begin with, then we don't have problems.
Right. And even when we go up there, even when it's not like, you know, dried out and like, you know, getting super bad, I am an ounce of prevention is, you know, worth a pound of cure kind of girl. So like, I always like measure secret my dog's pads and stuff beforehand. Sure. And then afterwards too, just to soften things up, you know, I mean, I don't want to take any unnecessary risks, you know? So.
I mean, a cracked pad can be detrimental to a dog, depending on how bad. I mean, like it's not career ending, but it can be a couple weeks.
An abscess and yeah,
then, right.
Yeah, it could be bad news for sure.
Absolutely. Well, I always ask this, or at least I normally do. What are some of your favorite traditions? Because traditions to me are a really big thing, especially because I'm a late onset hunter. I took it on myself, so I created my own traditions with the people that I hunt with yearly. Right. So traditions are big for me. So what annual traditions do you have, like with you and your mom and your sons?
Probably our annual tradition is the hunt that we take is for, like I said, the South Starkey Private Unit, which is an antlerless elk hunt. It's a cow hunt, and it's on our property. And it's just family. We don't allow any other. I mean, we have a couple people that my mom knows and that I know that will archery hunt. But rifle hunt, there's just a handful of us that go up. And it's always the week of Thanksgiving. That draw is always the week of Thanksgiving. And so, like, that's always kind of our family time. And it kind of started out because, oh, well, then I only got to take 3 days off work kind of thing.
Sure.
But it's just turned into, you know, one of those things that everybody looks forward to the week of Thanksgiving, because, you know, we start on Saturday and we, you know, camp up there, we hunt through and, you know, come down for dinner and, you know, I mean, it's not, definitely not a formal affair at our place at my home. Everybody comes in sometimes, and if we're lucky, we come in bloody, you know, like, we got an animal. So, you know, I mean, you know, so it's, I guess it's a little awkward for me sometimes, like friends will invite me over. Oh, well, you know, we might have tagged out or whatever. We'll come over, you know, in the evening and just visit and have to, and I'm like, do I have to dress up? Like,
like jeans and a sweatshirt? Is that okay?
I have a hoodie on and some, or yeah. Or I need I'll make to sure, first, yeah.
I'll make sure my clothes are clean. That's the best you're going to get this time of year out of me.
Do you have a weak stomach? That's my next thing.
Well, that's great that you do that every single year. I mean, yeah. I mean, I think traditions are just a big thing. I really do.
Yep.
Well, we're coming up to that hour-long point, which we always try to shoot for. Sometimes we go over. It's not a big deal. Who do you want to thank?
I want to thank my grandpas, but they're both not with us anymore. But my grandpa would have just turned 100. One of them would have turned 100 this year. My mom and my dad, I mean, just for, you know, teaching me about the outdoors. And my family, I'm also native, so I also, you know about roots and, you know, edible roots and finding groundwater and, like, a lot of, I guess, prepper or survivalist skills, but it's just, it's just been tradition for me, like, in my culture, and just everybody that's helped me, you know, become the person I am, you know, good and bad, you know, I mean, you learn lessons all through your life, and I think that, you know, there's a lot of people in my life that have influenced me for the better. And I was in the medical field for 30 years, and just the politics and everything got to be too much. And so in 2019, I just decided to walk away after 30 years. And now I'm doing what I love every day. So I work tirelessly, long hours, and work hard. You know, even guiding, everybody's like, oh, glamorous life. And I'm like, it's not all glamorous. You don't see all the work that goes into these hunts behind the scenes, you know, when I'm scouting or, you know, getting my dogs conditioned or, you know, they're cleaning your birds or, you know, so.
There's a lot. I mean, I think a lot of people take guiding for granted. I mean, every guide I've had on, which has only been one other one, but I know quite a few, like, guides in the industry, which I'll get on eventually. Anyways, they work hard. Every single one of them. Because if you don't work hard, you're not going to succeed.
You're not going to be successful. Exactly. And, you know, and I'm kind of the unicorn in the industry too, because I am a woman and I had to work really hard for my pro status, and I had to prove myself to a lot of people and, you know, to, just in the industry and, you know, I still work tirelessly, even though that I, you know, I'm a verified pro now, like, I still work tirelessly just because that's how much I love what I do and how passionate I am about, you know, just the love of the hunt, you know, like the dogs, like you said, it's everything. It's the dogs, it's the camping, the cold mornings, it's, you know, it's the walking, it's, you know, shooting a band of goose, or, I mean, it's just, it's all aspects of it. And, you know, eating what you've harvested, you know, I mean, it's all an experience. And I was blessed to, you know, everybody in my life that's ever, you know, help me out in any way, shape, or form, for sure. I'm super thankful that I'm blessed to be where I'm at today.
That's awesome. How can people find you if you want to follow you on social media?
Well, I am on Instagram, and it's MISS, Misguided Hunter, It's Miss_Guided_Hunter. And I also created and started my own clothing company, and that's called Canceled Flights Clothing Company. So hence bird hunting, we're canceling flights.
Sure, absolutely.
So those are the two Instagrams that I have. And I'm also on Facebook. Canceled Flight Clothing Company is on Facebook, and Charmin Stewart Sams is, I'm on Facebook.
All right. And I've looked at some of your stuff for Cancel Flights. Eventually, I'm going to quit being lazy and order myself a hat, because you just got some great hats, and I'm absolutely a hat guy.
I have to give it on right now. I just got to work. So.
That's great. I have a clothing company, which I don't wear the clothing from.
You're right. Exactly. Well, I don't want to get it dirty. No.
Right. That's true. Only when hunting, right?
Right.
Because that doesn't count.
Right. No, we've got some new nice hoodies and new nice ball caps for sure. So, and those are all Oregon made. Our manufacturer of our hats and hoodies that makes those are from Springfield and Eugene area. And the Free Horse Workwear, Seth Reno at Free Horse Workwear in Prineville, he does all of our leather patchwork and puts all of our stuff and our screen printing together for us. And then I'm Oregon native also. So yeah, a little bit of the West Coast.
That's awesome. Anything else you want to talk about? Anything else you want to say?
No, I'm good. I'm just thankful that, you know, you reached out to me and asked me to be on your show. I appreciate
it. Absolutely. It's been a great show. I mean, we touched base on everything. I mean, right. you have a whole slew of a lifestyle over there that I have no idea about, to be honest.
I guide 6 months out of the year, and then I cowgirl and do cows and ranch work the other 6 months out of the year. And I'm fortunate the owner owns both ranches, so I don't have to move. So
that's nice.
But yeah, so it's a lot of fun. It's, I mean, you get to be a cowgirl and you get to hunt. I mean, who can complain about that?
I don't know. I really, I mean,
right.
Obviously it has to be pretty good if you gave up a metal career to go to it. I mean, it's not that it's less work, it's a more fulfilling type of work.
Right. And I just went back to my roots, honestly. Now, you know, I mean, all the slave labor I put in when I was a kid on our ranch, now I get paid to do it. No.
There you go. There you go. I get paid for my upbringing now. I like it. I like it. Well, I think we're going to end it right now and sign it off. I think I appreciate you being on. I mean, you brought a whole different viewpoint to the show that we haven't had yet. So I'm really thankful for that.
Well, thank you for reaching out again. Like I said, I'm truly honored that you reached out to me and asked me to be a part of it. And I'm excited to see what the future holds for you and for me.
Absolutely. I see good things in both futures. I really do.
I do too.
Well, everyone, thanks for tuning in again. And until next time.
Thanks for tuning in to another killer episode on Paddle and Fin. Don't forget to go check out our website at paddlenfin.com. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel at Paddle and Fin. If you got a question, comment, want to hear from a future guest on a future episode, feel free to email us at paddlenfin@gmail.com. Don't forget to follow us on social media at Paddle and Fin on Facebook and Instagram. Shout out to our show supporters, Angler, the Angler Button, and app just makes for a better time on the water and creates a virtual logbook for every fishing outing out on the water. Shout out to Rocktown Adventures, located in Northern Illinois, for all your kayaking, camping, and hiking needs. Shout out to Jigmasters Jigs. When in doubt, get the jig out. Go to jigmasters.com.